the quill!
Well, we're kicking off season two with one of the world's most celebrated mathematics professors, Gilbert Strang. Professor Strang has been teaching at MIT since 1959, and in addition to being a beloved presence on campus, is one of the most viewed online educators in linear algebra, reaching millions of students around the world and putting calculus in its rightful place. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Danny.
All right, you know Professor Strang.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've seen him around campus the last 20, 30
many times.
Years.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. I've been here forever, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be 89.
Wow.
He just retired this last spring.
Just a kid, right?
Just a kid.
Yeah.
I had him sign my book.
Oh, that's so cool.
Totally cool. Uh-huh. That is a treasure.
Yes, definitely.
Because I took the class with him over 30 years ago.
Yeah, imagine that.
No. Everyone was a little younger then.
A lot younger.
But anyway, it's his birthday on Monday, and we wanted to wish him a happy birthday.
Monday, it's coming right up. Happy birthday, Professor Strang.
Happy birthday.
Yes, enjoy.
So here's the deal. We took all of our stuff on the road.
Oh, we did, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
Me and Steve, we loaded up the cart, and we went down the infinite.
Yeah, the cart that we made.
The little cart, not the big cart.
Oh, that's right. That was the little cart time.
Yeah, stuff was falling off of it.
Oh, that's
every
right.
bump we hit.
Yes. Okay, now I'm with you, yeah.
We took it over to Building 26.
Right.
We went ahead and we crashed Tristan Ozook's class. He's a new professor for 1806, which is our undergraduate linear algebra class that was formerly taught by Professor Strang.
Right.
Have you gone to Building 26, the 26100?
Well, you're talking about the auditorium.
Yeah, the big auditorium.
I've been in the auditorium, and I've been through all the hallways underneath 26 many times.
Yeah, that's how you get backstage.
Yeah, I never knew that.
Yeah, Steve and I couldn't find it. For all the years we've been here,
right.
that was a new discovery for us.
Yeah.
We went upstairs.
Uh-huh, but a banana lounge.
Banana lounge.
Right.
We didn't get bananas.
There must not have been good bananas, though.
No, we were just in a hurry.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it, too.
Tristan was expecting us, so we were in a hurry.
Yeah, no bananas.
No, we went upstairs, we went downstairs. We couldn't get in. We felt like total chumps. Like, we've been here forever. We can't get in. We finally found it. We snuck all of our gear in during lecture.
Oh, no. Oh, they were having lecture?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. They were having lecture.
Oh, man. Wow.
And this was their message. Professor Strang.
Yes.
Take us back to your undergraduate years.
Well, so you asked me to look way back to when I was an undergraduate, 52 to 55. MIT was a different place then. The number of students I remember would flunk out, and then they'd come back. There was much more of that. Now, MIT has become highly selective. It's extremely difficult to get admitted. So the students of today have no plans whatever to flunk out and come back. But I'm just remembering stuff from years ago. Rush Weikert was a classmate. We were all in the same, it was groups of 30, and our names both started with S. Groups of 30 sort of stuck together for the whole physics, chemistry, math. I had to take mechanical drawing. At that time, it was probably in Building 3 on the fourth floor. Something.
That's when the skylights were up.
Yeah. So I mostly asked Schweikert to help me draw circles. Anyway, I would still need that help.
Professor Strang's circle drawing tutor was Rusty Schweikert, an MIT alum and aero-astro who became a NASA astronaut. Rusty piloted the lunar excursion module for the Apollo 9 mission in March 1969, a low-Earth orbit mission to test and prepare for the moon landing, which took place only 4 months later. Hey, if you need help drawing circles, I'd imagine astronauts are pretty good at it.
Everybody, I hope, watching will understand that I'm not an engineer. I can't get my printer to work, much less with a computer. But it was a nice place. Yeah, I enjoyed it. There weren't very many math majors. Maybe one teacher that'll be especially known to listeners about course two was Steve Crandall. And he became a sort of mentor for me, even though I was in math. So I took, it must have been 2001, or maybe it was then 201.
Yep, mechanics and materials, stress strain, elasticity, failure.
We had to learn just very basic stuff. I remember free body.
Free body diagrams.
Diagrams, that's right. So anyway, it was, and because Steve Crandall was pretty mathematical, too, there wasn't too much engineering that I couldn't deal with. It was math that I was happy with. Anyway, so I was happy in that course. I can remember an exam on which this will reveal the truth, this exam. So it was a quiz that was a really tough quiz, and some of the scores were low. My score was 99.
What happened?
So I'm bragging now about that. except there was a one-point question. And it was a true-false question, or only two choices. And I don't remember what the question is, but I got it wrong. And I realized at that point that I would never be an engineer. It was a question that an engineer would just see. You know, it didn't involve a bunch of mathy, abstract stuff. It was a practical question. And would this happen or would this happen? And I missed it. That taught me.
So that galvanized your decision
to
stay in math?
Well, I was already a math major, I guess. But I realized that I was in the right place being a math major and just picking up the math part of mechanics. Yeah.
It's unusual for someone from the math department to take these mechanical engineering courses.
Yeah, well, that's the only one I took, 2001. But it introduced me to Steve Crandall. At that time, he had to write a thesis, and he was my advisor. The thesis actually got turned into a small, short paper. So my very first paper was with Steve Crandall about the Rayleigh-Ritz method. Uh-huh. Well, now, Rayleigh-Ritz, who were they?
Oh, there's a lot to unpack here. Part one, the paper. The paper is titled An Improvement of the Holzer Table Based on a Suggestion of Rayleigh's. It was published in the Journal of Applied Mechanics in 1957 and describes adding an energy-based approach to the Holzer method to estimate the natural frequencies of a torsional system. Part 2, The Mentor. Steve Crandall, a legend in mechanics. Professor Crandall wrote the book on mechanics that we still use today in 2001. Steve Crandall's mentor was J.P. Den Hartog of mechanical vibration fame, who was Stephen Timoshenko's protege at Westinghouse in the 1920s. Which brings us to part three, The Secret Engineer. Hearing this story, it's clearer to me how Professor Strang was so effective teaching mathematics to mechanical engineers. His heritage is in mechanics, and furthermore in the tradition of Timoshenko, Den Hartog, and Crandall. He may claim he's not an engineer, but I kind of think otherwise.
So I've always felt course two was a good one.
Told ya.
After MIT, I got a scholarship to Oxford in England. So I was there 2 years. And then to UCLA because they were good in numerical analysis. My PhD thesis was about finite difference methods for wave equations and heat equations and Laplace equation and so on. Finite differences. That was sort of the lively topic with Peter Lacks at NYU as our guru, as our leader. But so that was fine. I was a finite difference person for a while, theoretically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I thought, oh, it's funny looking back. So I thought my plan was, since I had zero money at that time, I thought I'd be an applied mathematician and work for IBM or something like that. But MIT math department wrote to offer me a job as an instructor, and that solved the problem of what to do next after the degree, after the thesis. So I came to MIT. Mm-hmm. Yeah, came back to MIT in 59. So I was here 52 to 55, then 2 years in Oxford, 2 years at UCLA, and came back in 59. which seems like a long time ago and is a long time ago. Some years later, along came something called the finite element method. Well, I just would hear those words. I guess actually there were a couple of course, two faculty like Jürgen Batu were key people in finite elements. Anyway, I thought, okay, I'll learn about this. What is it? Is it just finite differences in disguise? No, it was different. And actually, it connects directly to Rayleigh-Ritz method. I just realized that as I was walking over. And finite elements is just a different way to set the equation. Finite differences, you start with the differential equation. And you just take every term in that differential equation and you replace it by finite differences. Finite elements starts a little different way with things like energy and work, and closer to engineering, really. Mm-hmm. That was a turning point for me to think about the finite element method, because it was all done by engineers, mostly mechanical and civil engineers. It was a success numerically, and it was exactly the Rayleigh-Ritz idea of having some trial functions and finding the best combination of trial functions to fit the equation. It involves some nice math, and those functions were piecewise linear, mm-hmm. meaning mm-hmm. just a bunch of line segments hooked together was the graph, or piecewise quadratic, piecewise parabolas. It was math heaven, applied math heaven. Finite elements, I'm sure, as it grew and succeeded and displaced finite differences in many ways. And that led me to a real big change in my life. One was knowing engineers and talking and reading the journals. And the other thing was writing a book.
Professor Strang admits that the first draft of his first book about finite element analysis didn't quite hit the mark. The first draft applied only when regions were defined by a uniform square mesh, which he said wasn't realistic.
That missed the main point of finite elements, as I came to appreciate. So I left that book aside. I turned it too much into a math problem from its real source as a great way to compute solutions to partial differential equations.
Talking to engineers brought Professor Strang to general geometries and irregular meshes, what he calls the real thing. So the project was picked up again. An analysis of the finite element method was published in 1973.
Anyway, then the book had general geometries, triangular meshes and quadrilateral meshes. It's a happy memory. And for me, the special part was to learn that I enjoyed writing a book. So more or less, I kept going. I didn't stop because it was just came naturally.
Professor Strang published more than a dozen books since Analysis of the Finite Element Method. Titles include Linear Algebra and Its Applications, Introduction to Applied Mathematics, Calculus, Introduction to Linear Algebra, Computational Science and Engineering, and Differential Equations in Linear Algebra. There's no need to comparative shop for math textbooks. They are the Bibles of the field.
And I don't want to fail to mention the course that kind of came out of those books had the number 18 for math, 18085. I'm hoping some people who listen to this podcast will have taken 18085. That was absolutely my favorite course to teach, and partly because it was mostly taken by grad students, first year grad students in mechanical and in aero, mm-hmm. were the biggest numbers in the class, and they all came to do the job. It was a great class every year, and I always said, as you mentioned, that I'm there to teach you guys and not to grade you, which is still my motto. But you have to depend on the class to do their part, And those classes really did. You know, they showed up for exams and took them and learned. And yeah, I could go back to 1808-5. That was really special. I might comment on it. MIT students are a little different now. Let me leave that for later.
I'm wondering if there was a particular time where you saw the most significant transitions.
The big change. I see. Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know if I was conscious of it or it was just sort of happening. And really, of course, I'm extremely proud of MIT. It's really tried to do things right and succeeded. And we've had good presidents. So for me, of course, the only president I would ever have called by his first name was Chuck Vest. He was just easy to know. And he was the one responsible for open courseware. Mm. So for me, if I had to think back about my time at MIT, it's pre-open courseware and since.
MIT Open Courseware is an initiative to disseminate all of its undergraduate and graduate course content online for free. Professor Strang's undergraduate course is one of many examples with a complete set of over 30 lectures. I counted approximately 20 million views of these lectures on YouTube alone. Professor Strang was already a legend in the field by the time OCW came around, but he galvanized his role as the worldwide linear algebra professor with this online series. If anyone out there wants to learn about the existential pleasures of eigenvalues and the importance of singular value decomposition, Professor Strang's online lectures are the gold standard.
It started in about the year 2000 that I thought, well, I could get my class videotaped. This is the linear algebra class, 1806, because the physics guy who taught 801, who was a superstar on the screen. So in the big lecture room, 26100, 801 was being filmed. My class happened to be in that room the following hour. So I thought, well, maybe the camera could just stay in there for the next hour and film 1806. It wasn't that I thought it was going to go anywhere. The math department had some great teachers. Professor Rota was one of them, a friend of mine. And I just thought, okay, maybe if I set an example to have my class filmed, maybe Rota or the right guy would teach his class on film. Well, I don't think that happened for Rota in particular, but of course others have. Anyway, well, maybe this is a part of my whole life, really, is to think that linear algebra deserves a bigger place, deserves a place alongside calculus in what students learn. Mm. And we're approaching that now because data science and other new topics are becoming super popular. Classes of 500 or something, taking data science.
And we're dealing primarily with concepts in linear algebra.
That's right, with matrix is the key. Data comes in a matrix, and you have to understand how to get it out. Eigenvalues are part of it. Now 1806 ends with singular values. Mm. They're the right replacement for eigenvalues. Eigenvalues are for square matrices. But data doesn't come in square matrices because the rows and columns are
always generally different.
Yeah. Yeah, entirely different, measuring entirely different things. You know, they might be patients and diseases or something.
Sure.
Anyway, so the most important math thing I could tell viewers is learn about singular values.
Beyond the eigenvalue.
Beyond eigenvalues, it's singular values have really taken over. They're the powerhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that had to get into the class, into 1806. Often it got in on the last week, so it couldn't be on the final exam and people weren't paying attention. But anyway, it comes sooner.
As you added material, how hard is it to pull material out and how did you make those decisions?
Well, that's a problem. Yeah, but I think night and day about how to organize linear algebra, but certainly singular values have to be included. If you had a lot of time, then you could go on with, well, probability and deep learning, neural nets, and but singular values. Actually, the singular values come from the matrix A transpose times A, or A times A transpose. Mm-hmm, those amazingly have the same eigenvalue. So you're back to eigenvalues of the symmetric matrix A transpose times A. But as I say this, every person who computes says is thinking, Professor Strang, never multiply A transpose times A. It's it's a big operation. It makes him matrix numerically less reliable, more closer to risk. Yeah, but in theory, the eigenvalues of A transpose times A, or their square roots, those are the singular values mm-hmm. of the matrix. And they're super important. Mm-hmm. And we have good algorithms. That's the main achievement, really, of numerical methods in these years, is to find good algorithms. And there's a seminar this afternoon at 4:00 in the math department about algorithms for finding eigenvalues.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. We can do that for matrices of order, whatever, 1,000. When you get up to those numbers, you have to do sampling. But for matrices of order 100, I mean, mathematicians would not have had any clue how to find the eigenvalues for a matrix of order 100. But now that's routine.
And how about teaching in the classroom? How have things changed over the years for you?
So I was teaching here 60 years, so I saw a big change in MIT. It's in the top three worldwide. Sometimes it's in front of Harvard and Oxford and Cambridge, and other times one of those is number one and we're two or three. And why? What does MIT offer specially? I think it's the more maybe down-to-earth. I mean, it's a lab like the Pappalardo lab that MIT still has, which is a really good thing. Don't lose it. Don't become all theory.
Coming from a mathematician.
Yeah, coming from a mathematician who would get totally, I'd be the student number N, some large number.
You mentioned earlier that the student interactions have changed a little bit. I'm wondering if you can comment on that.
The students, I'd say the students are better, but we had some, you and I've had conversation with other faculty members. My last class, for example, was a big class in linear algebra. And the number of student special requests, like they can't take the exam at the required time, could I have permission to take it at a different time, could I turn the homework in late, et cetera, et cetera. And students taking two courses that met at the same time, that doesn't make sense to me. So it's become difficult just mechanically just to keep up with the number of special requests that are involved mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. teaching an MIT, a big MIT class now. But the students themselves, of course, are way better than we were. MIT students are super to teach, yeah.
What advice would you give?
Well, learn linear algebra is my advice to everyone I meet. And it's become recognized as maybe not quite as important as calculus, but that day is coming. Yeah, it's calculus for
linear. Those are fighting words right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, sure. It's calculus for linear functions. And I mean, the simplest functions are linear, mm-hmm. first degree. And those are ignored in calculus, but that's the heart of linear algebra.
As we wrap up, any reflections about MIT?
Yeah, I'm proud of MIT. You know, like we're doing this interview now when the world is in a difficult position because of the tragedies in Palestine and Israel. But MIT is really just everything. When things go wrong, the presidents of MIT have made a big effort to help students get through them and see the the good things that can come afterwards. Presidents have set a good example, and I hope the faculty has for doing their best. I think we've been fortunate in presidents and in alumni. So the alumni think of MIT as a place that's trying to do its job right, and they're correct. That's how I see MIT too. It's been a fantastic place to work.
Online, I looked up, I'm sure you're aware of this, the Gilbert Strang greatest hits.
I don't know. I don't think I know about
boy.
That.
Okay, so these are quotes that are attributed to
quotes.
You.
I see.
So why don't you just read a few and then tell us what they mean.
Finite differences would have to scratch its head, figure out what to do. Finite elements would just do it. Yeah, so I became a cheerleader for finite elements.
Okay, so who are you talking about in this one?
The French guy was a great mathematician, but not God. But the German guy, unbelievable.
Okay, who are you talking about?
Well, I'm glad that made an impression. Yeah, it's nice to think of mathematicians as actually they were people. They walked around with other people. But they were amazing. I'm sure that the German in question is Gauss. So everybody thinks of Gauss as the greatest mathematician ever. I wonder who the French guy was. Laplace, maybe, or...
Fourier?
Fourier. Oh, yeah. Well, Fourier, he had a fantastic idea. Fourier is as modern as can be. So if we think about calculus, so that's Newton and Leibniz. But that's calculus.
Well, you got a real bone to pick with calculus,
I have to. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, here's one. I think it's good to remember that MIT isn't a picnic all the time.
Well, that's true. All right, last one. Here's a wholesome one.
Math is beautiful. Well, I probably did say that. You get some really nice answers. You can quote me on that. Yes, okay. Yeah, math is, it's just fun to see things work out right. Hopefully that happens in class sometimes.
The way you're able to address the subject and make it tangible is one of the many ingredients to your magic sauce in teaching subjects.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. And I hope some of it comes through the books now that I'm not actually going to be in class anymore. That's been a big part of my recent life.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you've touched millions of students around the world, and you've affected my life in a positive way. And
that's great.
Thank you for everything that you've done and continue to do.
Well, thanks for inviting me to have this conversation.
My pleasure. Yeah.
Well, that's really nice to think that you took my favorite course.
Special to know it is. And now a few greatest hits, as read by our students.
We really only have two independent equations, because this third equation turned out to be a fraud.
Are they orthogonal? Life is going to end on Earth if they're not.
Maybe Bessel himself remembered those stupid functions.
There's a mechanism there. I'll stake my tenure on it.
Oh dear. Looks a bit messy.
Taylor, you made a lot of trouble for millions of students.
Math is beautiful.
I want to thank Gil Strang for joining us in the lab. Congratulations on your retirement and happy birthday. Thanks to Tristan Ozook for letting Steve and me crash his party. And thanks to our 1806 students. And of course, thank you for listening. Next time, we'll be speaking with some former students, the youngest team to receive full FDA Class 3 PMA approval for their automated external defibrillator. Say that 10 times over. Have a great weekend, everybody.